everyone. Happy Tuesday. Hope you're doing well. Yeah, throw some emojis out. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome. Welcome to our second Eventions event. So happy to have you with us today. My name is Mark Hillens. I'm the CMO at Aramete. Again, thanks for coming. We have two amazing marketing sales leaders with us today. I'll have them do some introductions in a moment, but welcome, Sarah. Welcome, Jack. How are you both today?
Hello.
Excited to be here.
It's so great to have you both. We're gonna get started officially in a few minutes. We're gonna, you know, if you join us for the first Eventions, we're gonna do a rapid fire section. That's 10 minutes, another section that's 10 minutes, another section that's 10 minutes. Today's topic is all around sales and marketing alignment. How do we really make sure from an event standpoint that the marketing and sales teams come together to get the right people to the event, get them to engage? And also, you know, after the event, how do we continue growing that relationship, building that relationship? Let us get to know you all in the chat, though. Head over to the chat. Hello, everyone. Let us know where you're, you know, maybe listening in from. I have an interesting question, though. I have an interesting question for everyone. I'll let you, Jack and Sarah, think about it for a second. You know, because I was not prompting you with this question ahead of time. So if you could only bring three things to Mars. You're going to Mars, you're on Elon Musk's space shuttle, I don't know, whatever, right? You're going to Mars, three things. What would those three things be, folks? What would you bring to Mars if you could only pick three items? That is the question before we get into the content for today and the conversation today. I mean, let me, Jack, do you need some time to think about that more, or you got an answer?
People don't count, just things.
People the thing. You could,
yeah. Yeah, I guess I would bring my family. I would bring food and water combined. So that's one thing, kind of two. And I would bring infinite amount of books so that, you know, we are entertained through the rest of time. Maybe a TV and iPad if I had a fourth thing, but let's go with books for the kids.
you answered that extremely smart. That's basically like, you know, thousands of items, but you said three things. So that's really good. Sarah, what's in your mind? What do you think? Three things.
I'm going to go with that my family is a given, or in some days that I get to actually lead my family home on Earth. I'm not sure. It kind of depends on where we're at. But if I could bring my three things, I think I would bring something to work out with. I believe that exercise is therapy. So whether that's a treadmill or a bike or something like that, I would bring a book. I love to read, a fun book, not a business book. I would bring a book to get lost in, and I would bring ballpark nacho cheese. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Wow. That's a fun fact. That's a fun fact. Cool. I love it. I love it. What else? Yes, Sam, we do have closed captioning just right below the videos. You should see CC. Family, food, and water, books, my dog, food, and water, iPod with music, food, water, books, says Martha, University of Florida, hello, family, Netflix. So family, you know, so people are bringing their family, so that's good. It's like, it's a common thing. That's good. Water, yep, I like that. The cats, Isabella, yeah.
I might have to change my answer. The music, that's actually, I might have to change books to music. Like a Bose speaker that plays for the rest of time type of thing. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
We should have asked the question, how long were we going to Mars for? Was it like a permanent transport?
Yeah, I think it's like, what? How long does it take, they say, to get to Mars? Is it like a few years it would take, theoretically, I think? Anyway, we're getting deep into it, folks. Another interesting way to think about this question, related back to this topic, is like, what are the three things you would bring to a conversation with your sales team, or vice versa, with your marketing team? What are the three things you would bring? So we're going to get into it. So let me share my slides really quickly so we can like orient ourselves and have Jack and Sarah do some intros. Here we go. And again, thanks for coming to the second Eventions event. We did one a few weeks ago with Daryl from Gorapulse, the CMO. We had a great conversation with him about just business practices during a recession. How do you handle, you know, your marketing strategy and think about it during a recession? So let's do some intros though, and then get right into it, because we're going to do 30 minutes on three topics starting in about 4 minutes. So let's have Sarah Jennings, SVP of Sales at Swugo, do a brief introduction. Thanks again for joining us today, Sarah.
Yes, thank you for having me. As you mentioned, I'm SVP of Sales at Swugo. I've been with Swugo for almost 2 years now. I've spent a bulk of my career in kind of the early to mid-stage startup, building and scaling sales team. And I'm excited to be here.
Amazing. A lot of knowledge in that brain on how to partner best with marketing. And also, you've probably done, let me ask you this. How many events have you attended? How many events has your sales team been involved in, do you think? First party and third party events over the years.
Yeah. I mean, if I look at it over the years and, looking back to early days, pre-COVID, now post-COVID, I mean, probably hundreds at this point in time between virtual roundtables and in-person events and in-person roundtables.
It's amazing. And Dan, that is currently in the cards. We might be integrating with Swugo very soon. So sounds like you want that. So that's awesome. Jack, welcome. VP of Marketing at WorkRamp. Recently, Jack and the WorkRamp team has decided to use AirMeet for their upcoming event. When is the event? What's going on?
So we have a big event coming up in November that we will be announcing soon. We're excited to partner with AirMeet to power that experience. Introduction wise, my name is Jack. As you said, Mark, I lead the marketing team here at WorkRamp. We're an all-in-one learning platform, power learning experiences across your entire business. I've been in marketing for 15 plus years. I actually started my career basically in trade show and event marketing. So I'd have to go back, but I might have hit 1,000 events at some point plus in my career. Over the years. Big fan of events. I think it plays a huge role in, brand affinity, company growth, all of those things. And super excited to be chatting with Sarah today. I kind of joke, I spent a lot of my career actually in demand generation. And I always used to joke that demand gen is kind of the closest you can get to sales without being in sales because you kind of hold a number and all these other things. So big fan of the sales and marketing alignment conversation we're going to have here.
And I would argue if you're in demand gen, you're in sales. So
yeah, there you go.
Well, welcome to the dark side.
Yeah.
Love it. No, it's a great point. We're going to talk a lot more about that. So folks, 30 minutes, three sections. After that, we're going to do speed networking. Yes, you heard that right. You're going to dive into getting to know a couple people. You will be just randomly paired up with people. It's going to be quite the experience. We've done this a few times now. So we'll do that right around 1:40 Eastern. So in about 30 minutes, we'll get into speed networking. The first topic, though, is sales and marketing alignment. Just holistically, generally, how do you get your sales and marketing teams working more together? So we're going to talk about the idea of like goals and purpose and intentions, the alignment around how do you really create that communication that's so important? And then how do you hold each other accountable? Like knowing the metrics. So I'm going to stop sharing and we're going to dive right into it. We want to make this interactive. So if you have questions, throw them in the Q&A. If you want to throw a question or a comment in the chat, let us know. So I want to just have, start with Sarah, just you, like, just generally, like, talk about your alignment journey from your time at, your current company, previous organizations. How has that unfolded? Tell us some stories, I guess.
Yeah. I love this question because I think it has come a long way. So I think the relationship kind of between sales and marketing has evolved quite a bit over time. I think at one point in time, it was very focused on, what is marketing responsible and what is sales responsible for? And I don't believe that anymore. I think that together we're responsible for the bottom line, which is revenue. And I think that this has been my biggest shift in my own personal journey from how I thought about kind of traditional marketing and sales teams to how it is today. My head of marketing today is my right-hand person. She is my trusted advisor. She is my partner. There's very little that I do without running it by her first. We now are looking together at some of the traditional metrics like number of leads, MQLs, SALs, pipeline, but we look at those as all leading indicators and we celebrate bookings and revenue. Bookings and revenue is where we win. And I think in a more traditional or older way of thinking about things, marketing was celebrating leads and sales was celebrating revenue. But at the end of the day, if we can't turn those leads into revenue, then nobody wins. And so we have literally flipped it on its head to celebrate the revenue and looking at everything else as those kind of leading indicators. And so that alignment has led to, you know, really faster lead growth, faster overall growth. Our MQL to opportunity conversion rates have grown pretty significantly over the last 2 years. And our win rate is extremely high because of that alignment between the types of leads that we're bringing in and the communication that we have between sales and marketing and the shared kind of goals and interests.
Jack, what would you say? Because you're a big believer in holding people accountable. Like from a leading indicator standpoint, I love how you put that, sir, right? You've leading and lagging indicators. For you, like from a marketing perspective, like what's your most important leading indicator? And how do you like work with sales on that leading indicator?
Yep. First of all, I will say, Sarah, you totally hit the nail on the head. I think that that's exactly how I view kind of sales and marketing teams. So we're super aligned. I had very similar experience kind of in my career where, you know, marketing has now become a partner to sales and we're all focused on the same thing. So I love hearing you talk about that. But leading indicators for us, right? I think, you know, here at WorkRamp, we are doing a lot of different marketing activities across the board, but the leads that we pass to sales are going to be, you know, super high intent leads, demo requests. That's really kind of our, you know, main MQL that gets passed over to sales. And so, of course, you know, we're monitoring the things that are going to lead to those, to the things becoming MQLs, website traffic, you know, growth on different channels. But when you ask about like, what does it mean to hold each other accountable? I think that on the marketing side, you know, we always need to be looking at kind of quality of what's getting passed. That's why, you know, we have demo requests actually as one of the main kind of thresholds for passing, because we know that those people are most likely in a buying cycle, ready to have a conversation. You know, it's not someone that's downloaded a piece of content that might just be doing some education or starting to get to know your brand. So that's kind of, you know, one threshold on lead quality, but we're always looking at kind of channel by channel, activity by activity, how are things converting? And I really, you know, on the marketing side, feel very responsible for making sure that the stuff that we're passing is actually turning into pipeline and revenue. On the sales side, I think the accountability comes in really with, you know, things like making sure that the leads are getting proper follow-up. So that can come in the form of, you know, having SLAs in place. What's the first time to touch? Are we actually getting to these leads, you know, on time? There's all that data out there. I'm sure, you know, many people on this meeting have heard this before, but, you know, speed to lead. If you get to a lead 5 minutes or less, you have so much higher of a chance of converting it. You know, the longer you leave things out there, the harder it gets. So I think, you know, sales is really responsible for making sure that follow-up is happening quickly, prompt follow-up, effective follow-up. Are we continuing to try to get, you know, to that meeting? And then it's just collaboration, honestly. Like, you know, you need those feedback loops on from the sales team on, you know, what is working, what are they hearing in conversations? How can we as the marketing team make the buying cycle more frictionless? A great example of that is like, you know, having like calendar scheduling right on your website instead of having to actually even go through a sales follow-up process. So I think it really is about working together to make sure you're giving the best customer experience. And there's ways to hold, you know, both sides accountable, and everyone should really be kind of rallying around that.
Love those two answers. For me, I was writing a few things down, just looking at like what we do at Aramid and my past companies. There's three D's. Use and have the same dashboards. Don't be looking at different data. Same dashboards. Have the same definitions. Like agree on definitions. And this third one might be strange for people, but like, I think it's so important. Disqualification. Get on the same page when it comes to disqualification, because I want to ask you both, you guys, both you can respond to those three D's and chime in with input. The question I want to have you both answer next though is around like accounts. We're talking about leads though a little bit. Are your marketing and sales teams more focused on leads and contacts, or are you really more focused at the account level? Sarah, like you're smiling, you're both smiling, but like Sarah, I'll start with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a very timely question for us. We actually just finished the conversion from working out of leads in Salesforce, which has been my entire career, to now working out of accounts. And it's been a very interesting transition for us, and it's definitely the right way to look at the business. And the thing that drove us to that decision was actually the tech stack that we use and what surrounds us. because a lot of the tech stacks are designed to work off of accounts and not after off of leads. So for example, we could have a rep that was working Amazon and working one person from Amazon. And if somebody else from Amazon came through our lead channels, it could get assigned to another rep because we weren't working an account. And now, so we could work off of all one domain and leads can be routed through domains. It also allows us to expand into accounts much faster than we've been able to in the past. I think when you look at it from an events perspective, it allows us to look at events, not just from customer perspective or from new acquisition perspective, but for both. Because if you think about a giant account like Amazon, at least for something that Swugo sells, which is an event management platform, there could be 150 departments within Amazon that we could be selling into. And so whether that event is a customer event or a new acquisition event, we can treat it the same as we're looking at those events and how we want to get the most out of the events and the messaging that we want to send and goes back to aligning with marketing. What are the goals and the outcomes of that event that we're looking to run? And what is the message that we're sending into, whether it's a new account or a growth account or a current customer that's expanded as much as they possibly can. And then I'm super passionate about your D's. I could not agree with you more. I think the HubSpot Salesforce world has really caused conflict between sales and marketing, or you know, other tools that you can use. But for us, it's HubSpot and Salesforce, right? Marketing works in HubSpot, sales works in Salesforce. What is your source of truth? And so aligning on what we're saying our source of truth is and what reports and data we're using and operating off of those same reports only draws stronger alignment. Now, there can be discrepancies between those, but at least we know what we're looking at and what we're looking to solve for if we're all working off of the same data and the same reports.
Yeah, huge plus one. I mean, I think that's where a lot of conflict has come in my own career, where you have, you know, two separate reports and everyone's like, but wait, we achieved this goal, but over here you didn't. So having the same dashboards, I take it a step further. We actually here at WorkRamp have a revenue operations team centrally located across our entire revenue organization for this exact reason that, you know, our ecosystem of tech is, you know, they understand all the data flow. We have all the same reporting, all the same definitions, and they're kind of the keepers of, you know, helping make sure that is consistent across the organization. So huge fan of the dashboards. What were the other two you said, Mark? You said dashboards.
Definitions and disqualification.
Yes, and disqualification. I totally agree on the definitions. You have to have a standard. You know, again, it kind of like, I think earlier in my career, like what's a lead, right? I think even someone put in here, what's the definition of a lead? Like, are you talking about someone who just filled out something on your website? Are you talking about just an email you've captured? Or are you actually talking about someone that's a hand raiser that's, you know, taken a real action? I think that, you know, the more clarity you have, and honestly, I think sometimes the simpler you can make it, the better aligned you can be as an organization. And disqualification, I think that's really interesting because that goes back to kind of what I was talking about around the feedback loops. Like, it's equally as important for us to know what's not working so we can like stop, you know, do better targeting or optimize programs. And I think disqualification has a ton of tool for insights for marketing and sales teams. So I really like those three D's as well.
There you folks go. It's my crazy thought is validated by these two great go-to-market leaders. Perfect. Perfect. So let's do one thing before we move on to the next section. We're right on time. I love this interactive poll. We're going right onto the stage with it. You can vote super easy, right? Just on the right-hand side. What's the metric that's most shared between your sales and marketing team? We talked about leads, qualified leads. There's, of course, MQLs and SQLs. Debate around that. Don't have time today. There's pipeline. There's revenue. Don't currently have one. Don't feel bad. That's fine. As people answer this, like I remember way back in early days at HubSpot. I was at HubSpot for about 8.5 years. And someone named Dan Tyer, literally, he coined the term. It did not exist before this. He called it smarketing. Now, sales and marketing, smarketing. And we would have a sales and marketing meeting together weekly for the first, like, it was predates me, but like when the company was starting for the first like 6 years until it just got too big and it just wasn't, you know, logistically, you know, made sense. But just getting together. So just really quickly before we move on, Jack, do you guys have something similar right now on a weekly standpoint? And Sarah, what do you have? I'm just curious.
Well, sorry, do you mean, do we have a touch base with the, or just, yeah. So We have, yes, there's a ton of collaboration points between the sales and marketing team. I think one of the things we do really consistently that I really love is we do actually a look back meeting at the beginning of every month for the previous month and like pull out insights, pull out, you know, what worked, what didn't work. And then there's obviously like touch points in between that. But I sometimes think looking at kind of bigger periods of time help you gain insights. So love this marketing idea. Lots of collaboration points between sales and marketing. And then I'll actually answer that poll if you want me to. I can answer it live here and then we can pass to Sarah. But so my team is gold on pipeline, right? And I think we celebrate revenue and we are definitely looking at what turns to revenue. But we are gold more on pipeline in the sense that that's kind of the closest thing that the team can kind of control. And so again, people, you know, gives people something to connect to that's kind of in the short term. And then longer term, we're looking at, okay, how much of that pipeline from marketing turns into revenue? And we, you know, want to make sure that we're seeing, you know, higher contributions. That's ultimately the goal. But our kind of shared goal is pipeline as the North Star, because it's kind of the closest that the team can get to in the short term. So that's my answer to that question.
I like
it. Yeah. Mark, from my perspective first, I will have to say, I hate to brag it to you, I'm not sure you quarantined marketing because we were pretty sure we did that in my last role. So we also had a marketing meeting on a regular basis. Was very close with my last head of sales. She was actually a bridesmaid at my wedding back in the day. So I have always had very tight alignment with my marketing teams and my marketing leaders. But for us at Swugo, we have a very tight relationship. We meet weekly to go over anything that's happening. There's an agenda that's run. Our head of marketing actually runs the agenda. She's very good at running agendas. We keep it ongoing. We can add to it during the week. But we do a little bit, 1 week we do where it's just the leaders on the teams and then, or the, I guess the department heads, I should say, not the leaders. It's the department heads. And then every other week we add our team leads into those conversations as well. So we're spreading and sharing the knowledge base, not just with the heads, but also with some of the team leads to hopefully disseminate that information down quicker and faster to the teams. One thing I've learned through my career is you can send things in 10 different ways and it's the 11th way that somebody hears it. So we're trying to figure out all the different ways to just get the information to our teams, whether that's email, Slack, in a monthly meeting, a weekly meeting, sharing it with multiple people and levels in order to get that information across to each of the teams to drive that alignment. And then in terms of what we measure, I actually am a big believer that measurement should be shared measurement should be bookings. That's the end goal. And the reason being is I don't see that marketing's job ends with producing leads and pipeline. I see marketing's job as also supporting sales through the sales process all the way through the opportunity, through content, events. So we can be hosting, and Jack, I think you've mentioned this before, like hosting events that covering closing rather than a top of the funnel where we're just trying to drive leads into the pipeline. And so I really see that metric as a bookings as is the share. Then the company doesn't win if we don't get the bookings. And so and this doesn't just stop with marketing. I'm trying to drive that shared alignment across all of our teams. So creating more accountability across like big deal reviews where we're pulling our product leaders into it so that when a top customer is feeling pain, that our product leaders are also feeling that pain and that it's not just sitting with the pre and post sales teams carrying that weight.
Man, we could keep going on just this one topic for a long time. I'm going to pause. I asked that question and I wanted to do it, but it made us 5 minutes over. Such insightful answers. We'll keep talking about it though as we talk about what to do pre-event and post-event when it comes to alignment. Because one of the things that I think an event does is it acts as the center of gravity. There's just so much stuff that can happen and should happen, you know, as you get ready for the event, at the event itself, post-event, right? It's like a mega offer, right? It's like a huge offer. And when you think about sales and marketing alignment, one of the things that we start to do at Drift and now that I brought to Aramid is integrated campaigns, right? Because like you made the point, sir, communication. Jack, you talked about like basically, you didn't say it, but you basically talked about like the need for internal marketing. How does the marketing team do internal marketing? You both talked about it actually. And now when you think about pre-event, you're getting people excited about the event. But before even the event is announced, right? Like Jack, you have an event coming up, technically not fully announced. I apologize if I kind of, you know, spilled the beans for you a little bit. But like, how do you design the event with sales? So like, Sarah, why don't you start maybe? Like, how do you think about that? Because there are so many different types of events, so many different audiences. How do you begin?
Yeah, for me, the very first thing that we have to do is we have to align on what success means. So how do we know that that event is going to be successful? Are we measuring that based on leads captured? Is it pipeline created? Is it opportunities closed? Is it customer FaceTime? Is it growth? Is it retention? Is it brand awareness? What is it that is going to say that, that event is going to be successful? And how are we going to determine before the event even starts whether we're going to attend the event or put on the event next year? And that has to be shared between sales, marketing, and the CEO. And then I also think that the next thing you have to do is align on kind of the role that sales is going to play and the role that marketing is going to play. So who's doing the outreach? Are you doing, is marketing doing the outreach followed by a personal call from a salesperson to invite them to stop by the booth or attend a happy hour? How are you driving that? So if marketing's doing the outreach, how are we disseminating those touch points across the sales team to align with marketing? What is that messaging? Is marketing supporting us in the messaging that the sales team is using so that we are consistent in our messaging and the why we're going to be there and why we want to meet with somebody? Those would be like the, I guess those three things, not two things, that I would say are the most important things.
No, it makes total sense. I mean, you basically want to build with your sales team, it sounds like, an event brief. So you have it all in one spot. Talk about like definitions or documentation this time, right? Have an event brief that's shared with your sales team. And Jack, you have a philosophy around like an event can even be, you know, bigger than that. Or if you think about your event strategy as being bigger than just pure like, you know, demand capture, even demand creation, it's about community. It's about, you know, a broader set of activities that help, you know, the company grow, basically. Thinking about like how we think about it, event-led growth, using events to not just grow like maybe the leading indicators of success of revenue and retention, but more the holistic business as a whole. So yeah, I'd love to get your take on this because you're starting to really ramp up your event strategy. So how are you doing that with sales?
Yeah, I mean, I think defining, so, you know, for me, what's really important right now is showing how events are a bigger part of our strategy, right? So we have a couple of main North Star goals as an organization this year. And it's really important that I can showcase, okay, we're not just out there doing events just for, you know, sake of events. It's like, this is going to help us, for example, create community. So again, one of our goals is how do we, you know, foster community among our customers and even in the learning and enablement community at large. And so when we're, you know, doing an event, it's again like, hey, this ties to this bigger strategic goal that we're really working on as an entire company and showcasing how it's a bigger part of the strategy. I think that's really important. And then I mean, everything Sarah said is totally accurate. I think the other thing that works really well is showcasing to sales, like what's in it for them? Why should they actually care about this? You know, the metrics obviously help do that, you know, showcasing how it's part of the bigger strategy, but also how like personally, is this going to help them cultivate relationships with prospects and customers? Like, you know, how does this help sales kind of in their day-to-day get to their own goals? I think that also really helps, you know, get the buy-in that you need when you're putting on these bigger initiatives or any type of event really for that matter.
I mean, you had some claps there. Who agrees with Jack and Sarah? Let's use the emojis down there. Let's clap. Let's raise it up here, folks. Like, I could not agree more because what we did in my past two companies, and we're starting to do this at AirMeet now, is show to the sales team, here's what happens when you get the right people to these events. Yeah. So like win rates go up, your close rates, like we highlighted the best salespeople and got them to actually sell the event for us to the rest of the sales organization. So here's a hot take question I want to have you both answer. Hot take question. I don't think this is in like the prep we did. Maybe it is, I apologize, but I don't think it is. Have you and should you, so it's a two-part question. Have you done this and should you do this now? Give your sales team a quota to getting people to register for free or to sell tickets? It's the quota question. So yeah, Jack, do you want to go first?
Yes. I think it depends on the event. I will tell you that for our big upcoming event that we're about to announce, we do have a goal for sales to invite to the event. So that will be a big part of, you know, this is a huge initiative across the company. So yeah, absolutely. I think for bigger events, that is totally fair and a way, you know, way to get people bought in. And I think maybe for, you know, some of our more regular programming, like web, you know, some of the webinars that we're doing on a monthly basis, we don't necessarily set quotas, but we will give them the information and, you know, make sure that if they want to use it to an outreach and stuff, it's a little bit less, you know, that's a little bit more like marketing driven, I guess you could say. But I think for big events, absolutely. Our sales team has a quota for the big one coming up, and they're excited about it too, right? Like they want to get to this goal. So I think it's a nice way to get aligned around an event like the one we're going to put on.
I happen to agree with Jack. I think it largely has to do with the type of event that you're hosting or going to. Is it an external event or an internal event that you're putting on? Are we attending someone else's event? Are we putting on the event? And what's the goal of the event? Is the goal of the event to close new business, or the goal of the event to sell tickets and make money? And then those two things depend on whether you are goaling your sales team in order to drive attendance to the event. If the event is designed to close business, then I'm actually a bigger fan of giving the sales team like 10 free tickets that they can use across their network to get them to attend the event. The one caveat that I will say to that is that if it's a virtual event, it's okay. If it's an in-person event, what is that stick to get the carrot to get the person there if you're going to give them a free ticket? How are we not wasting that ticket to not have them show up if they're not personally investing in that event?
I'm going to add one thing, Mark. I do, Sarah, I think you bring up a really good point. Like, I'm talking about maybe more top of funnel, but like your point on closing events, that would be more of like a sales-led event, right? You probably wouldn't expect that marketing would be doing kind of the push on that. So I really like that point that like kind of where it is. And the funnel is super important and probably determine also how you end up, you know, tackling that as a team.
Although I will say, and this is why I go back to the bookings being the number one thing, is that one of the things that I've done in my past, I haven't done this at Swugo because it's been COVID, but for my time that I've been here, but in my past, we would run like CEO level or executive level intimate VIP dinners. And those really were intended to be closing events. So we would invite top of the funnel prospects, but we would invite a heavy amount of people that were close to closing in our pipeline to try to just tip them over the edge to get them to go and to build a relationship with an executive level person rather than maybe somebody that we're working with through the sales process. And in those were definitely marketing driven and sales supported to kind of help set it up, get the messaging, get the right people there, get the speakers there, prep our CEO for the roundtables.
Yeah, we actually did a lot of those at Drifts that were all digital online, but we would spend between $300 to $500 per attendee in the experience. So they would get something like a week before the event. They would get this like highly curated experience like a day before the event, another package. And then they would get something after the event from their salesperson. And they were closing at like 60 to 70%.
I haven't even thought about doing that from that perspective. Like to me, it was correlated to the dollars. Like we're willing to take you to an really expensive dinner and have somebody come in and talk. But like you can give them that same level with sending them. Like I have a whole list of things that Salesforce has sent me on my desk over here. Like I love it. Like it shows up at the door. I'm like, cool. I get to open a new box, right? But yeah, you could give that. And I haven't thought about doing that. So thank you for that takeaway.
Yeah, no worries. It definitely worked. You got to do it with the right intentionality, though, which kind of shifts into like what happens post-event. Because I think if you only do like one thing during the event, you're missing an opportunity. And that's just another thing for everyone to think about. I don't believe, because we went so fast into digital virtual only, like event people and marketing folks, even sales folks, like forgot to think about like the cost per attendee. Like a cost per attendee at an in-person event is like $1,000. It's like that's, you know, it's like $1,000. But then you do virtual, it's like, oh, it's like, I don't know. You actually do the math, it's like $10. So you're spending $10 on a virtual thing versus, yeah, some of these in-person ones cost money. There's still a loss leader, whatever's more about bookings. But I just feel like you got to pay more attention to your cost per attendee metric when you think about how you design the event. And this is more pre-event stuff, but what's your folks' take? Like, Jack, what do you say, cost per attendee?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, especially for like the bigger initiative that we're planning right now, cost per registration, cost per attendee is going to be interesting to look at and kind of how that moves also through the funnel. I think you're right though, like putting on, you know, in-person events can be more expensive. And if you can kind of do it at scale through virtual and then you can add kind of delight experiences and things like that along the way. I think it's an interest. I think it's more though, kind of what we were talking about in the beginning, like a leading indicator metric. I think you still want to kind of, you know, align your success metrics around what the impact to the business is going to be overall. So you might use that as an input into how much you're going to end up spending on an event and, you know, kind of how you shape your program. So I think it's an interesting metric. I think it goes back to kind of being more of like a leading indicator metric versus like what I would center the entire event around, if that makes sense.
Yep. Makes sense. No, definitely. So switching to kind of like the next and last topic before we get into speed networking, folks, we're going to do some speed networking, meet some folks, have some conversations about whatever you want, but it could be about, you know, this topic right now, which is, Sarah, if you had a magic wand, what would you ideally want to see happen post-event from a sales lens standpoint, right? If you could just wave that magic wand, what should happen? Like, you know, what do you think that should look like?
Well, I mean, naturally, everybody that attended that event, whether it was virtual or in person, would become an opportunity and then they would close. But how do we make that happen? For us, the way that we set it up is we use campaigns in Salesforce. It was the main driver. I said tech stack before was the main driver. This is actually the main driver. It was the main driver that we made the conversion from working in leads to working in accounts, is to get rid of the idea of like, I get credit, you get credit for that opportunity that was created. And we can now attach campaigns to an opportunity that's created and understand that, yes, somebody might have come through a social channel on our website, but they were working with a partner. And so partners gets credit for that lead that's coming through as an opportunity. And so does the marketing team. And so we're all in campaigns now. So immediately coming out of an event, we need to get everything into Salesforce as contacts on accounts and add campaigns to each one of those for the event that they attended to make sure that that event is getting credit at some point in that lead cycle's lifetime when they get created into an opportunity. Then we would put all of those leads into a marketing nurture track. So they're getting hit by marketing. I know one of the differences between how we think about things and how Jack thinks about things is attendees for us are not MQLs. Attendees for us are just people that are showing interest. And so we don't put those into as an MQL. So it would go into the marketing nurture track. And then we would treat those actually as outbound leads. So we would analyze that pipeline and we would put them through the same process that we would put an outbound leads into until they raise their hand and say they're interested in a demo. And then it would get into an MQL. So the last thing that I would do is, so working with marketing, we would create a post-sales follow-up as well. And we would probably handpick some of those needs to figure out which ones do we actually want to put into an outbound cadence. Probably don't want to spend a whole bunch of my outbound efforts going after kind of the lower the funnel opportunities, but are there some enterprise strategic opportunities that we want to partner with marketing on and do both a joint marketing follow-up and a sales follow-up? And then the biggest missed opportunity I see across companies is the check-in post-event. So depending on your sales cycle, there needs to be a 30-day, a 90-day, and a 120-day post-event of reviewing the metrics. Oftentimes, you run the event, you kick off all of your campaign stuff, and then you go to do the event again the next year, and we're like, was that event successful? Like, what did we actually get out of that event? And you should be talking about the event just as much 120 days post-event as you were talking about it 120 days pre-event.
Yeah, we do in a similar vein, actually. Like, so ideal case scenario, right? You have all these wonderful people that attended. They want to talk to your, you know, they want to talk to your team. They're ready to take the next step. But I do think, you know, follow-up plays a big part in that. And we, though, in a similar vein, actually, we do send our event attendees to the outbound team versus kind of the inbound team, just because I think it is more of an outbound motion. Even if they've, you know, kind of shown interest in your company, it still takes, it's not a demo request, right? So you still have to put in that personalization, do the work to understand, you know, what the opportunity might be with that account. I think I really also, after an event from a marketing perspective, it's like, how do you take that event and have kind of how do you make more content coming out of it, right? So what are you doing to create ongoing content, videos, you know, snippets or blog? How do you take that and really like blow it out so that it's not just kind of this one and done deal? That's, I think, ideal on the marketing side, right? And then give that to your sales team so that they can go, you know, put that into their outreach sequences, have it be part of that 120-day follow-up. Hey, did you miss this session? Check this out type of thing. So I think like, there is a lot that needs to happen immediately after an event. And hopefully you get kind of that big pop of impact. But really, once you do one event, that should be fuel for, you know, like a year of content and reasons to do outreach to an account. So
that's a really interesting point, Jack. And Mark, you and I could probably spew on this for hours in terms of like, what is a hybrid event? What really is a hybrid event? Is a hybrid event and a one event? Is a hybrid event two events? And in my belief and my world and where we come from and I'm in the event space is that 365 degree community. So how do you take the content from the event and then build this community where you're using that content year round? I think in some worlds, depending on who you're talking to in the event space, like that could be considered like a hybrid event. But is that a hybrid event or is it two different events?
Yeah.
If you're running a virtual event, if you're running an in-person event and you also have a virtual component, is that one event or two events? Or is that an in-person event with people that are live streaming into the event? Like what truly is that? But really passionate about that concept of the 365 degree community and how we maximize educating our customers and our prospects through the content, all the work that went into actually creating those events in the first place.
So let's ask the question right now to the audience. So before we do speed networking, go to the chat. Just type one if it's one event, hybrid is one event. Type two if it's two events, hybrid is two events. What is it? Let's just see what people say really quickly in the chat. Here we go. So put a number.
People get passionate about this. You might start the fire.
Right now, it's two. It's two. Here we go. What do we have? Neither. We have neither. It's oh, wow.
I knew Spugo and AirMeet were aligned.
Aaron, do you want to come on stage? You want to raise your hand, Aaron, and come on stage and tell us your answer? Like, what does that mean? Neither. We'll put you on stage if you want. That's
can be three.
Eric says it can be. No one definition for hybrid depends on the folks' goals of the event. Okay, this could be just a good icebreaker for the speed network that happens next. What do you think? Because you're right. Like live stream, it's like a sporting event. More sporting event is more live stream. Would you say that's a hybrid
exactly.
event?
I mean, that is literally the debate that we have internally.
Yeah. Okay. I love it. All right, we're at a time. So one last thing to leave the audience with, then we're going to go to speed networking for 15 minutes. Jack, the thing you want to see, if there's one thing, and then Sarah, same question, if there's, and you can manipulate this question again, improv, right? You're like, I'm going to just answer a different way. It's kind of like Toastmasters, if you know Toastmasters. But if there's one thing you wish you could experience at an event, an in-person, not virtual, let's not talk about online, digital, like an in-person event, one thing that you think that an in-person event has to have, what do you think that thing is for an in-person event?
Well, I'm weighing my answer, which one I would go with. I think that in-person or online, honestly, it's about, I really believe in like the power of connecting people. And so I think, you know, how do you connect your audience to build relationships? Is probably the most important thing. So that could come out in the form of, you know, content, or that could come out in the form of literal networking. But I think the connection part is probably the most important part of an event and how you kind of bring that to life for people.
Sarah.
I think at its core, what everybody wants when they attend an event is good food. But in more serious talk, you can't put on a great event. And this goes to actually what Jack was saying. You can't put on a great event without great attendees. So who is that ideal customer profile that you're going after? And are you bringing the right people together to have the right conversations and the right experience? And I think all of this also backs into, and selfishly based on what Spugo does, it's also the experience of getting to the event. Was that a good experience? Are you walking in the door and checking in with a smile on your face? Or are you frustrated because you didn't know where you were going? You didn't know what you were doing. It was hard to get your badge scanned and get your badge. Like, was that experience frustrating so that when you walk in the door, you're flustered? Or are you walking in the door excited to meet the people that are there, like-minded and willing, wanting to talk about the things that you want to talk about?
Two wonderful answers. First impressions matter a ton. Before we do speed networking, and I'll show you how to get to speed networking in just 30 seconds, I want to quickly remind you folks of the next Eventions. and also thank Jack and Sarah. In 2 weeks, we're going to do the third Evention series. Two great people, Katie and another Sarah, they're coming in to talk about how you can design what I call an event wave. How do you take kind of what Salesforce has done over the last few decades, couple decades, and build upon each event? Just keep the event wave building more and more momentum. They're going to have some great insight for you coming up next 2 weeks, I should say, 2 weeks, not next week. And really quickly, to show you how to get to the speed networking, you just go to the top of your screen and click on view schedule. It's going to be 15 minutes. You'll be able to connect with 3 to 4 people. If you want to extend the time of connecting with people, you can do that. But you just got to go back to the agenda, click on view schedule right at the top. You can go to speed networking right now. But thank you. Let's give Sarah and Jack a huge round of applause. Come on. Show them their applause. Show them the love. Let us know what you thought. We'll answer some questions in the chat as well. Apologize we couldn't get to everything. This should have been like an hour and a half segment, but you know, it is what it is. We really hope you enjoyed it. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
No. Thank you. And view schedule right above where I'm pointing. View schedule. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Thanks again, everyone. We'll see you at Speed Networking.